We will move on to number 25 on the agenda, which is AIS 2020 summary and 2021 approach with John Plott. Good morning again, John.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. John Lott, Aquatic Resources Chief, and while Chris Hall's loading the PowerPoint for my presentation, I'll just go over some of the background for it. There were some new authorities that were granted the department by the legislature for 2020 related to aquatic invasive species management, specifically as it related to the ability to do watercraft inspection and decontamination stations in the state. And some of the big things there that were added were the ability to do roadside inspection stations in coordination with the Department of Transportation. And in addition, the ability of law enforcement to conduct stops if a vehicle that's towing a watercraft bypasses an inspection station, or if the officer has a reasonable belief that the watercraft being towed would be in violation of any of the AIS rules. So with those new authorities in place, and the fact that it was a priority for the department in our strategic plan this year, we saw an increase in the amount of effort on watercraft inspection and decontamination program this year for 2020. So this presentation will be giving an overview of what we accomplished in 2020, some lessons we learned, and then the initial plans for 2021. So the objectives for 2020 included preventing the westward expansion of AIS, especially zebra mussels. And with zebra mussels, at the end of 2019, they were known to be in the Missouri River system except for Lake Oahe and then a few smaller waters at the lower end of the Missouri River system. So the idea there was to prevent the westward expansion away from the Missouri River as you go west. The other objectives were to use inspection stations to help develop best management practices with the public. In other words, being able to actively engage the public, show them what they need to be doing at a time where we had their complete attention, and then maximize the contacts with boaters who were using the containment water. So at that point, it was containment waters again were the Missouri River system except Oahe and a few smaller waters near the lower end of the Missouri River system. Next slide, please. So for western South Dakota and the Black Hills in 2020, we had a prevention approach that was based at lake access areas. The idea was that watercraft would be inspected prior to launching, and we had a presence at Shade Hill, Belle Fouche, Pactola, Sheridan, and Angostura reservoirs. These are five of the six larger reservoirs in western South Dakota. We don't have Deerfield included in this list because the fact that there's a no-wake zone on that body of water helps reduce the risk of zebra mussel introductions by boats, and we only have a certain amount of resources to work with. The partnerships that we had for 2020 included some grants from the Bureau of Reclamation that were still current this year for a spending authority, and then some help from the Forest Service with the logistical arrangements at some of their properties. Next slide. Missouri River and eastern South Dakota. There again, the focus was to maximize the contacts with boaters overall and to intercept boaters who were leaving containment waters for parts of the state that at that time were not known to be infested with zebra mussels. At the beginning of the year, we had an access-based approach. We weren't completely geared up for the roadside inspection stations till the beginning of July. So the first portion of the year, we had those access-based stations. And then we found that in certain areas of the state, like in the Northeast, when there's not a lot of overall boating traffic, we actually are able to contact more boaters at a particular access on a lake that that might have a hot bite going on than on a roadway. That was a lesson that we learned that I'll talk about a little later as well. And the partnerships here, one of the big things with the roadside stations, even in the legislation, was coordination with the Department of Transportation. And both with transportation and then the Department of Public Safety, especially the Motor Carrier Division, were very helpful in helping us establish locations for stations on the ground and working with us so anything we had in our plans would not be overlapping with either construction at a site or planned motor carrier activities. Next. So 2020, we had a total of 9 WID crews across the state. Again, WID would be watercraft inspection and decontamination. Had one crew in Sioux Falls, another one out of Yankton, Webster, Fort Pierhead 2, Chamberlain 1, Rapid City 2, and Shade Hill 1. And the amount of time these crews were in service varied by the station and specific circumstances. Again, Missouri River ones and East River were roadside and access base, and the ones out of Rapid City and the Black Hills were, and Shade Hill, were access based. The total number of roadside locations used was 22, and for access locations, a total of 44. Next slide. This map of the state illustrates on the western side of the state, in red, those four waters that were handled out of the Rapid City office: Belle Fourche, Pactola, Sheridan, and Angostura. And then at the top of the map on the western half, that would be Shade Hill. Shade Hill had a dedicated crew, so it had a staff that was there for 4 days a week doing inspections for 10 hours a day. The other waters in red that were handled out of Rapid City were visited between 1 to 2 days at each of the waters each week. As you move east on the map into the Missouri River in eastern South Dakota, what is shown here are the roadside inspection stations that were established. Again, in addition to these roadside inspection stations, there were also 44 lake access areas that were used. And these sites, again, were to intercept boaters who were coming off of the containment waters and overall to maximize the contacts with boaters to work on those best practices. Next. For inspections and decons, we did over 9,000 inspections in 2020 from the beginning of June through Labor Day weekend, roughly. And what this ended up being, on average, we had 9 crews. It was about 1,000 inspections a crew. Fort Pierre and Rapid City were closer to 3,000 inspections. They had 2 crews in each of those locations. And again, in the Northeast, it was harder to contact boaters by roadside inspections, and we had to scramble some and switch back to the access-based inspections. With the mandatory nature of inspections in 2020 and the increased effort, we had substantially more inspections than in 2019 and 2018 when they were voluntary. The decontaminations also substantially increased. We, I believe the decontaminations ended up being about 2.5% of all the inspections. The majority of those were for standing water, so a water in a live well, bilge area, maybe somewhere else in the boat. Full decontaminations also occurred, and the Chamberlain and Sioux Falls offices are the ones that that did the most decontaminations. Those were related to decontaminating boats that were leaving either Lewis and Clark or Lake Francis Case, both of which are containment waters. The small number of decontaminations, or zero, in the Black Hills was because the majority of boaters there were boaters who were from the Rapid City area, and they had not been to the Missouri River system or any other containment waters. The boaters from outside of South Dakota, from western states, were knowledgeable in best practices that they had to employ. And the boats that had been at the Missouri River and were also using those reservoirs around the Black Hills were considered a low risk because of the type of boat and the best practices that had been taken into account. Next slide. So what were the main thing again with these inspection stations that I thought was really a bonus was that opportunity to have the one-on-one interaction with the boaters. We can have education out there, we can do gas station TV, but you absolutely have their attention when they have to stop and visit with you. And in that situation, it was excellent for reinforcing the boat plug rule, live well plugs, and a big one was draining the outboard. That is one in the past we hadn't hit well with our outreach efforts. The owners of jet skis were not aware they even had plugs in their jet skis, and a lot of the wakeboard boats, there's actually a plug on the bottom of the boat that has to be removed, and the boaters were not aware of that. So the forced engagement was very beneficial, and it provided an excellent opportunity for law enforcement to focus their enforcement efforts on things like the boat plug rule. And next slide. This is a slide you've seen before. Sam Skelhosh showed it last month. In orange are the warnings that were issued by officers, and the yellow are the citations that they issued. You see a lot of those are associated with the areas that we had, roadside, WID stations, and also access-based ones, but there are other locations on there that officers were targeting. There are some, as an example, on Highway 12, Highway 14, 210, I'm sorry, 212, and some other areas of the state. So while the inspection stations were an excellent place for officers to interact with the public and work on compliance, there were other places that they also had a presence. Next slide. And on the citations, this chart is updated through the end of this last weekend. The top one there, the conveyance removal restrictions, that would be anything that would have to do with clean, drain, and dry, including boat plugs. The watercraft restriction one with 94 citations issued, that would be pretty much specifically the boat plug rule. And then the failure to comply with inspections was a failure to stop at inspection stations. And there were 63 warnings that were issued for that. So you can see where the law enforcement presence really helped with the development of roadside check stations in the state and the public's awareness and realization that it's mandatory participation in that. Overall, the citations this year as of this last weekend, 262 that were issued and 135 warnings, about half of which were bypassing those inspection stations. Next slide. This year we implemented a new system of cost tracking with the Aquatic Invasive Species Program. You can see at the bottom of the slide there that The overall expenditures through early September were about $421,000. Now, we have some pretty standard ones every year. We have administration, which includes the AIS coordinator, whatever time administrators would have on AIS efforts, some of the scheduling stuff in the fisheries areas. We have outreach and education, which a big part of that is a contractual work with companies like Lawrence and Schiller on outreach and marketing. We have monitoring, and then we have non-inspection and decontamination management. We might be controlling plants in a small area where they're newly introduced or something like that. But on here, and especially for 2020, the two that I really want to highlight are the law enforcement. This is the first year we've been able to track that, and then the WID program. So we had about $70,000 in law enforcement expenses and about $212,000 on the WID program. So those two together, about $275,000 associated with inspections and increasing compliance in efforts to prevent introductions and to slow the spread. When we talk about the grant funds we have available, there aren't a lot out there. A lot of the work that we do in aquatics and terrestrial management, we have federal aid dollars where 75% of a project is federal aid. That is not the case with aquatic invasive species. We have typically, we have about $46,500 a year from Fish and Wildlife Service to help support our statewide management plan. This year, it's actually $93,000 with a change in spending authorities from Congress. And then with the Bureau of Reclamation, the last 2 years, they've had grants that they've given us specifically for implementation of watercraft inspections and decontaminations at the BOR reservoirs. So Shade Hill, Angostura, Belle Fouche, and then they also have a presence at Pactola. So of the $475,000, roughly 25% or so would be considered federal as of this year. Next slide, please, Chris. So some of the lessons we learned is that mandatory inspections really helped with engaging the public. We had their focused attention. We were able to show them specifically on their watercraft how to meet the clean, drain, and dry requirements. A lot of the times, roadside inspection stations, they did maximize contacts when there were a lot of boats out there. However, access-based approach was best for prevention at a particular water, like the western South Dakota waters. And in the northeast and other places, when only a few access areas are being used. One thing we do need to do is to better coordinate the scheduling of our stations amongst the fisheries areas such that we don't have boaters encountering two stations in a day. And there is going to be some need for adjusting the roadside locations. One would be to increase safety. Another thing, though, is to just to maximize, again, our ability to contact anglers. Next slide. So going into 2021, next. Whenever you work on a plan for implementing any program, you need to stop and do a status assessment. So here we have a map of South Dakota that shows the water resources in blue. Have the glacial lakes in the northeast there, not a whole lot in the James River as you go west. Then that Aberdeen area, you have a lot of wetlands as you move west in the state, mostly stock dams and some public impoundments. And then there's the six larger reservoirs in the Black Hills in western South Dakota that I've already mentioned. We also have East River, a heck of a lot of interconnectivity of roadways. The bodies of water East River are, they're also very connected. West River, we don't have that. Those six reservoirs, especially the prairie ones, are pretty isolated. They don't have a lot of connectivity with other waters, and there aren't a lot of ways in or out of them to access them. In orange on this map is what we currently know to be infested waters for zebra mussels. Again, the Missouri River system below Lake Oahe, and then at the lower end of the Missouri River system, Lake Yankton and McCook Lake are also infested. And then in the northeast, Pickerel, Kamapeska, and at Lake Cochran. The status assessment right now has to include the fact that we don't have resources to keep zebra mussels contained in the waters that they're already in. East River, Missouri River, the interconnectivity of the waters and the system of roadways we have, it's not going to happen. As is often said, the horse is out of the barn. There, what we'll be focusing on is using watercraft inspection and decontamination to help the public, the boaters out there, to develop, adopt those best practices to help to slow the spread. When you go West River, though, we do not have any known zebra mussel populations in the western reservoirs. So there, what you will see is a focus of our efforts in 2021 towards preventing the introduction there. And we've worked through a number of spreadsheets, numbers of staff needed, other expenses, what we might get from grants, et cetera, et cetera. And on the slide here is the initial plan we have for 2021 for watercraft inspection and decontamination for the western part of South Dakota. Again, it's those five reservoirs. Last year, we had a total of three crews to cover five reservoirs. This year, we'll have a crew dedicated to each of those. We'll use 20 interns, which equates to approximately 9,600 hours of intern labor. And we'll operate these stations the period we have the interns from the middle of May through mid-August. So about 12 weeks, 7 days per week, 10 hours a day. Last year when we had three crews West River, that was accomplished with five employees. They were crews that worked to 4 days a week. So besides increasing the number of crews from three to five, we're also, for each of the crews, we're doubling the number of interns. We are applying for federal grants. We don't know what we'll actually receive there from the various funding sources right now, but best scenario, if the overall estimated cost was around $183,000, with a 75% a match from federal grants, the GFNP part would be about $46,000. The hardest part with this, though, is going to be acquiring the interns. In 2020, statewide, we had 17 people working on the WID crews in terms of intern and seasonal staff. That would be statewide. To get four interns in a place like Lemon to work Shade Hill or Hot Springs for Angostura, that might be a challenge, and that's something we'll be taking into consideration. But the initial plan for West River, right now, without knowing how we're going to do with acquiring federal funds And if we're going to be able to acquire all the interns we hope to, is presented here. The next slide, Chris. Okay, Missouri River in eastern South Dakota. The horse is out of the barn. We said the best we hope to do is to slow the spread of zebra mussels with the idea that that is through engaging the public, the boaters, and having them adopt best practices. There is still a value in watercraft inspection and decontamination stations. I think one thing we really learned this last year was the effort we have there on inspection stations has to be carefully focused so we maximize contacts and we maximize the ability to interact with the public. So as an example, I'm expecting that we do more inspection stations at times when there's a lot of boaters out, that we're targeting locations where we know we can have a lot of contacts. At most, right now in the plan for 2021 would be four WID crews, one out of the Webster, another out of Sioux Falls, then Chamberlain and Fort Pierre. Unlike the West River crews, which would be four people because they're covering 7 days a week, these would again be two or four crews of two people each. That should say eight interns there, not 16. I apologize for that a mistake in the text. But again, they'd be 4 days a week. And here we would be modifying the effort that we have in the field based on available grant funds and also the amount of use out there. So during the peak, we'd be out there 4 days a week with crews. At times where we're not as busy, we would not have as much presence out there. The next slide. So those potential funding sources again, with Bureau of Reclamation, or used specifically on waters that they manage. We got $53,000 and $61,000 the past 2 years. In the 2020, I'm expecting more. We've asked for some substantial support of the WID program at their waters. QZAP, that stands for a quagga and zebra mussel, and it's a funding source with the Fish and Wildlife Service. We haven't applied for this before. We are going to apply for it. Again, with a focus on the western five waters in the state. This is a funding source specific to trying to keep the western states zebra mussel free. And I think keeping the reservoirs in western South Dakota zebra mussel free is a good strategy for the overall west. And then there is a funding program with the Corps of Engineers. It was authorized in the Water Resources Development Act that Congress passed in 2018. It'd be a 50-50 cost share. I believe we'd be able to use those funds East River as well as West River with the idea that there's only a certain amount of federal funds that you can use on any project depending on the particular grants. But with the Corps of Engineers, the implementation of this has been very slow. They had believed it would be in place this last July, and I'm hoping we have it in place by next year. And again, that would help with East River, South Dakota, and Missouri River especially. And next slide. In summary then, for the efforts planned right now for 2021, realizing we have unknowns with regards to being able to secure the intern staff to staff the stations that we've identified, and we don't know what the grant funding will be completely right now. We've got those individual seven-day crews at those five western waters, then Missouri River in eastern South Dakota, total of four crews. Those would be at most 4 days a week. and they would be focusing on maximizing contacts. One thing there we did learn from Highway Patrol, public safety, is that their sobriety check stations and their motor carrier way stations both are very important for increasing, maintaining compliance with those specific areas of law. And they thought that having roadside inspection stations is an excellent idea for doing the same thing with the best behaviors for boaters in eastern South Dakota. And next slide. That is the end of the presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions or address any comments that you may have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, John. Good report, excellent plan. I'm sure it's going to generate some discussion. Commissioner Meese, is there any detection of the mussels moving up the, like the White River or other the contributaries coming into the Missouri River? Like the White River, it's awful salt, silty, and stuff like that, or won't they go into those type of waters?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Meese, zebra mussels will move slowly upstream in rivers and streams. The water chemistry of the White River is an unknown for how that would impact zebra mussels. One thing with a lot of our streams in western South Dakota, those are permanent rivers, I should say, is that there's not a lot of rocky habitat, and it's the hard surfaces that they will attach to. So my bet is if in any of those western tributaries the water quality is sufficient that they would do well, we'll see a slow upstream spread, but we won't see high densities within the rivers themselves.
Also, can wildlife move them around, like ducks and geese and stuff like that?
Through the chair, Commissioner Meese, that's one where I'm smiling here because not being the AIS expert on our staff, we're currently without a invasive species coordinator who's in on all the meetings in biology. And my staff have corrected me a little bit over time, and zebra mussel beligers are actually pretty fragile. And in some studies that have been conducted, as an example, with a couple ponds and ducks that are moving between the ponds with zebra mussels in one pond but not the other, they haven't spread. With anything, though, I'm never going to say never, but in visiting with our own staff and then in visiting with Minnesota, the beligers are pretty fragile, and the chance of them being introduced by waterfall would probably be pretty low.
Mr. Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sharker, John, how do we answer the folks out there that still really question our efforts on this and don't understand why we're fighting it, so to speak, that they believe this is, we're trying to stop an unstoppable foe here, so why not let it just take its course and go through its life cycle or whatever? I mean, how do we answer folks with that type of thought process? Because I got to believe every state that's dealing with this has had that conversation. Do we let it run its course or do we fight it?
Excellent question, Commissioner Sharp. And there, I think the biggest thing is, why deal with a problem if you don't have to? And we're not going to see a major impact on our fisheries, I bet. That's not what I'm expecting. What I am expecting is that that whenever you have zebra mussels in a water, there are going to be impacts to the recreational boaters for having mussels on their boat lifts. If you have a pump in the water, you know, just a lot more maintenance and mitigation associated with it. And the longer we're able to keep them out of any body of water, the better. When you begin to get into the western reservoirs, there's a lot of infrastructure that relies on the movement of surface water. As an example, you get them in Belle Fourche and they get in the Belle Fourche River there, there's a very large irrigation district that relies on that source of water. There's going to be a lot of money they have to spend, a lot of time they have to spend on mitigating the impacts of mussels. So overall, it's, you know, why deal with the problem if you don't have to? The slower the spread occurs, the better. We're reducing reducing problems for people if we are slowing that spread. And we don't know how it will do in any particular situation. You know, it's not a fisheries issue, but there is an impact for recreational users besides boaters in that the shells are sharp on the beach. You get zebra mussels in your lake, everybody has to start to wear aqua socks, as an example. So there are reasons, I think, to slow the spread. Our objective, East River, is to be as efficient as we can in slowing that spread by maximizing the contacts for each day we have a crew out.
Thank you.
John, we've had some discussion among some commissioners about perhaps inviting whoever's in charge in Minnesota to join us for the next meeting. They're ahead of us, if you will, in our problem in the East. I'm sure they've had to address the question that Commissioner Sharp just asked, and what's the point of continuing to fight it? They've got a lot more lakes over there infested than we do, so maybe we can talk about that, kind of like we did with Dr. Janke, brood survey issue. It was helpful to have him join us, but I've got some questions about resources. I don't remember, it seemed like though when Montana was focused on this, there was some federal legislation that had been passed and there were certain states in the West that had access to money that maybe wasn't on your slides. I don't remember what that is, and I guess my question is, can you remind us what that is if you remember, and is there any effort, if that separate fund exists, for us to get some legislation passed so that we can be part of that in, you know, Washington, D.C.? It wouldn't be here, but.
Mr. Chairman, there's a number of different funding sources that are being utilized in the western states. The Pacific states, so any state that would have a portion of the state in the Pacific drainage, so other side of the Continental Divide there, including Montana, they are eligible for Corps of Engineers funds, like I mentioned, may become available for the Upper Missouri River Basin. So those funds would be at a 50-50 cost share. A lot of your states in western, west of us here, have some type of an AIS fee that is implemented, associated with watercraft, either residents and non-residents or solely non-residents. And there is a fair amount of funding from states and general funds as well. I don't have the number specifically in front of me, but if you looked at Colorado and Montana, you're probably talking in that $4 to $5.5 million range for the cost of their programs a year. And there has to be that in-state contribution to any of those core programs, 50-50. They also, though, are taking advantage of those QZAP federal funds at a better matching rate of 75-25. But there is a substantial commitment on the part of the state itself in funding the AIS effort.
Are we going to give any consideration to asking the legislature to implement an AIS stamp, make people purchase that in order to help with this effort? Secretary Hepler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We, you know, we discussed that, and it just, with the timing we just went through with that habitat stamp, and, you know, and we're still dealing with the implementation of that, ensuring the public that we are directing those funds where we said we're going to. Timing probably isn't the right time here. I think it'd be worthwhile to go back and talk about that again, maybe, you know, a year or two, and see where we're at that particular point. But that certainly is going to be broader than just, you know, it's got to be broader based than just the recreational users. Particularly start talking the western side of the state. The irrigation is so incredibly important over there. It's going to be broader, you know, that's going to, you know, conversation we need to be able to get with Hunter and others and talk about what that progresses. But in the meantime, you know, I appreciate the fact, you know, the commission and GFMP is committed to stop the introduction of the western reservoirs. I mean, we have to do our best to make sure that doesn't happen.
You know, which kind of leads me to, consumers still working with other state agencies, asking them to participate and get involved and help fund this, but maybe not. Are we still trying to ask others within state government to help?
Right now, Mr. Chairman, you know, John, you can correct me. I'm not sure when the last time we had that group get together. You know, when Governor Null, when she was ready to introduce legislation, she asked the secretaries to get their staffs together, which we did, and, you know, and that worked out very well. And I know that there's a work group that's put together after the secretaries left the room. I'm not sure if the work group's still in place or not, but to my knowledge, you know, we haven't gone back out and asked the other agencies to help fund this. We certainly want their assistance as much as we can, particularly interfacing with the users. There are certain users, for example, that Secretary Roberts' staff have that we don't have access into. But maybe, John, you can expand upon it, you know, if you're still working with Hunter staff or, you know, maybe DOT staff, Aaron staff, on trying to at least interface with those users.
Mr. Chairman and Secretary Hepler, we haven't met with the state agency AIS work groups since the pandemic started. We did have a meeting planned for March that did not occur. We've pretty much been networking with Environment Natural Resources on potential impacts of the various new infestations that we've documented, and they have been a partner in reaching out to surface water users, help us understand who those surface water users are. Of course, transportation and public safety have been very helpful in the implementation of the WID program this year. With regards to financial contributions, though, those have I have not pursued them strongly because my basic understanding is that there aren't a lot of dollars available. A lot of the programs other agencies have are tied to federal dollars with very specific requirements for how the dollars are spent. So it comes back to state dollars of some sort, and that is what is often in low supply.
You know, in that regard, I wonder if there's an argument to be made that COVID-19 issues have resulted in more and more people using water resources so that we would be legitimately entitled to some of the COVID-19 money that we read about in the newspaper. Might be worth a consideration. Secretary Hepler.
let them push my finger down. But that's an interesting thought, because, you know, we're trying to be legitimate, but also, I mean, really talk about what it means to get increased recreational users into our parks. You know, there's, as you know, we turned in quite a package around that. It's interesting. It's just also, it's a timing thing of one, you know, the money needs to be expended by a certain time. So as far as the surveillance next summer, at least unless something changes through Congress, that probably won't be applicable. The potential, though, is if there's, you know, equipment that John and crew needs, for example, you know, that may be one where we potentially could order and get it purchased by December 31st. But that's an interesting question. It might, Chairman,
bear some fruit.
We'll go back. We'll go back and look at that.
And the only other thing, and then I'll quit, is are we going to try to have a concentrated education effort, if you will, in the West, saying, listen, here's what's going on, here's what could happen, and so please, everybody, pay close attention. I mean, I think that would be helpful, too.
Mr. Chair, I would expect that we do increase our focus on our outreach and education efforts in Western South Dakota. We're talking about partnering with Forest Service on some outreach programs they're applying for with that QSAP source of funding as well.
I just wonder if people around the lake associations or whatever wouldn't be very helpful to
Commissioner Locken.
Commissioner Locken here. It's very clear responsibility lies with the people in this room to do what we can in this matter. I think we owe it to the future generations to hold it off as long as we can. And I totally agree with, let's say, circling our wagons in the West and doing everything we can do to prevent it from entering the western part of our state. Our adjoining state to the west, Wyoming, I was out there this summer and stopped at a place where they were inspecting boats. And I asked the guy, what do you do if you find a zebra mussel? And he says, we impound the boat. And I said, how long will it be impounded? And he said, forever. And I'm not suggesting we do that. But if people know that we have the power to impound a boat, that would be a game changer. And I think in the Black Hills area, I think we could send that message where they cross the Missouri River that we are really serious about this and we owe it to the next generation to do what we can.
Thank you,
That's pretty good. But don't you think, John, that by now, I suppose not everyone, but you would think most everyone knows about this problem, this issue, and its importance, which sort of takes me to issuing more citations, fewer warnings. I'm sure there are circumstances when a warning would apply, but it seems like education is, I mean, we've done a lot of education, and so if there's a violation, it seems like a citation would be more appropriate than a warning in most circumstances. But maybe that's not what you're finding.
Mr. Chairman, I think there's very high awareness out there. We've been doing outreach and education on aquatic invasive species for 8 to 10 years now. The use of inspection stations and having law enforcement presence there certainly is helping with the compliance, and the continuation of that at the right level in eastern South Dakota, I think will help us to get to where we need to be with compliance. That continued presence out there at a certain level. Beginning Next year, we're hoping to have the ability to track better the bolt plug violations and other violations, specifically in the software application we're using. So we will have a direct a measure of how we're doing on accomplishing our compliance target. But I think we're really working towards that. We are influencing angler behavior, a boater behavior, and staying with it, I think we are going to be able to help slow that spread.
Thank you, John. Any other? Commissioner Whitmire.
Commissioner Whitmire. Yeah, so zebra mussels certainly became the first, I guess, on the list. John, what else? What's your second and third, like the tree boil? What other species are, you know, when you guys are checking boats, are you looking for others on the hulls, you know, for number two and number three on the list? What would those be?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Whitmire, one of the biggest things that was really reinforced to me this year in visiting with Minnesota is aquatic vegetation. We do have curly-leafed pondweed in a few waters in the northeast, Missouri River Corridor as well. Eurasian water milfoil is another one that we have on the Missouri River, not in the northeast that I know of right now. The plants themselves are a concern, but we learned from Minnesota that the veligers, when they settle out, and then the adult zebra mussels also are often attached on plants. So you might be moving plants, even if they're native plants, they may still have zebra mussels on them. So that would be the second one, I believe, would be having, or that clean aspect of a clean drain and dry, besides not a moving water under the drain, the cleaning part to make sure you're not moving aquatic vegetation.
Any other questions or comments? No, thank you, John, very much.
Thank you.
Why don't we take 5 minutes? Everybody, it's been a couple hours. We'll take 5 minutes and then we'll be back.